Hi, friends. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Hello APGD, a neighborhood podcast about the Audubon Park Garden District in Orlando, Florida. I'm your host, Michael Lothrop, and today we'll be speaking with Lexi Govlock, chef and owner at Swine & Sons, the award-winning counter service restaurant and caterer located at 1280 North Orange Avenue in historic Winter Park. You can also visit them online at swineandsons.com or on Facebook and Instagram. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, or if you'd like to be a sponsor, please feel free to message me on Instagram at HelloAPGDPod. Thank you for listening. This episode is brought to you in part by Trevor Brown, Audubon Park resident and trusted Central Florida realtor with Fannie Hillman and Associates, proudly serving their clients for over 40 years. For listings, market trends, helpful home buyer and seller tips, email directly to Trevor at FannieHillman.com. Or find him on Instagram at TrevorBrown407. And with me today is Lexi Govlock, chef and owner of Swine & Sons, the award-winning counter service restaurant and caterer located in historic Winter Park. Lexi, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yes, I'm so happy to talk to you. I'm such a big fan of what you do. We've known each other for a while, and we are loyal customers at Swine. I was curious. I've never, you know, asked the pronunciation of your last name, and I've been saying it wrong this whole time.
Yes,
I guess most people do, right?
Yeah, and that's okay.
Govlock.
But it's Govlock, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to get used to saying that the right way now.
It's not on you. We are terrible about correcting people.
So. I am the same way. Like, a lot of people mispronounce my last name and it doesn't bother me. It's not like, you know, it's not nails on a chalkboard or anything like that. It's just sort of like, it's a hard
it's
one
meh.
To pronounce.
It's close. They're close.
Close
it's,
enough,
they're
right?
trying.
Yeah, they're trying.
They get points for that.
That counts for a lot. And you're celebrating 8 years of Swine & Sons next month.
We are.
2015.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
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 Happy anniversary.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. April of 2015 was the original.
Yeah. And you are in your third location. You outgrew your first spot, which was originally next to Cask & Larder, which is now Ravenous Pig. Tell me about that whole, the origin story of that.
Yeah. So, you know, we started in that little spot that really is a retail space, and it shares the roof with the dry cleaner there. It's now the dentist, the Dapper Dental Dentist.
Yeah.
And we were in that spot from 2015 when we opened until 2019. So about a little over four years in that spot. It was a retail space. And so when we first opened, for the first 3 days we were open, we were a retail concept. And then it shifted really rapidly. So there were so many pickles and condiments and side dishes and kind of things that people really loved at Cask & Larder. Mm-hmm. And so Reese and James Patrikis kind of were looking at it and they said, you know, how can we, like, let's open a retail provision store where we can package these pickles and sauces and, you know, our special hot sauce that we make and our Bama white sauce, and we can, you know, serve a few sandwiches, but sandwiches were not supposed to be the core of the concept. It was really a retail food concept that we were opening. So that's what it was. And really, I mean, I'm dead serious. Like, we always laugh when we tell this story, but within the first 3 days of being open, people were like, what do you mean? We can't come in and just get like a freshly made sandwich. We were making the sandwiches ahead, like a dozen of this and a dozen of that, and wrapping them in paper and like making them next door in the Cask & Larder kitchen and then bringing them over.
Mm-hmm.
And so we couldn't take modifications. We couldn't, you know, we couldn't allow people to customize. It was like very rigid, and people just didn't get it. You know, they were like, what? You know? And so
they want it all, right?
Yeah. Which is fine. But like, we realized the error of our calculations within the first, like really within the first week, we were like, oh boy. So, you know, then it was like, okay, cool. So we're in this retail space. And so, you know, so we stuck it out in that space for over 4 years, which is kind of remarkable looking back. I mean, it's like literally we started Swine & Sons with two induction burners and one half-size undercounter oven. And I mean, there were like days where it was like, oh yeah, we're catering a wedding for 150 out of our single half-size undercounter convection oven and our two induction burners. Like, it was completely insane. And people would come to help us out with producing these larger events. And they were just like, wow, like, are you serious?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
you performed some minor miracles
in
that kitchen, right?
It was wild, or that space. It wasn't even a kitchen.
Right?
It wasn't even a kitchen. And truthfully, it wasn't licensed to be a kitchen. So
yeah. I mean, that's okay. That's in the past now. So.
It's totally in the past. But I mean, like literally Department of Ag would come in once a year and look at us and go, huh, this doesn't look like it should be under our jurisdiction. And then they would say, okay. And then they would just renew our license. So
fair.
I don't know. But, you know, so then in 19, we had the opportunity to, we really needed to move is what it really boiled down to, is that the space just wasn't the plumbing, the space in general, you know, it just couldn't keep up with what we were doing, and it wasn't making sense for us anymore. It was really like it had become too hard to function in that space. And James was, Petrakis owns that building and was wanting to do something different with it. And we were wanting to kind of expand Swine and make our lives a little easier with a more fully functioning kitchen. And so kind of all the stars aligned and we were able to purchase the brand, and then we moved it into the local butcher. We moved it the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a great spot. I mean, you guys, we've spent a ton of time in your restaurant locations, and you are just kind of always slammed. I mean, it's like, it's amazing what a following you got from the beginning. And people knew you from Ravenous Pig and kind of followed you along that path. And then they're like, this is, you know, this is kind of a fast casual, but just really, really elevated style of sort of Southern cooking and sandwiches and salads and great sides and just all of those things that you don't really find in other spots in town. So people really gravitated towards it at that time and still do. And now you're in your third location, which is a beautiful spot. I was just there the other day.
Oh, good.
Congratulations on
Thank
the
you.
Spot.
Yeah. Since October. So
yeah. And what a weird time to be moving and opening during, you know, kind of coming out of a pandemic as we were and are. So yeah. Tell me about that process.
I think that, you know, number one, being inside the butcher shop for the bulk or the meat at the worst part of the pandemic, that actually worked out really well for us. Because the, like, if you recall, there was a time where like Publix ran out of meat and like people, everything was so screwy with supply chain. And so the butcher was slammed. I mean, like the butcher counter, they were like doubling their numbers from the year prior because you couldn't get the stuff that they were carrying at Publix or...
And more people were cooking at home too, right? Because they restaurants, it was a little harder to do that, right?
So I think, you know, we always had a strong takeout business, even in the original location. And I think the takeout business and then just the butcher never stopped having foot traffic. So I think those things really saved us in the pandemic, you know? So it was a really fortunate arrangement for that time.
On top of your loyal customer base already, right?
It's like... And we closed the dining room for a time, you know, there when there were, you know, some rules about there for a while. There was like something about you could only have X percentage of your dining room open. And I mean, we had like, you know, 24 seats. So it was like, okay, well, what are we going to go down to 4 seats? I mean, you know, so we just closed the dining room, but we were able to sustain on takeout, which was good. So,
yeah.
And so then probably, I mean, really, we were talking about this new location. The conversations were going on for more than a year before we finally did it. And, you know, what had kind of happened was the Bear and the Peacock, the Brewstillery, had gone out of the space there and the Winter Park Social House at the 1288 North Orange down by Black Bean Deli. So that space had become vacant, and the Courtesy Bar from downtown, their lease was coming up on their location downtown on Orange Avenue. And so they were looking to move. And Diana from Courtesy and I have kind of gotten to know each other through catering, really, over the years. We tend to have a lot of crossover clientele. So we would see each other at events, and we just sort of got to know each other a little bit through.
They're such a cool couple.
Through work. They're great. Yeah. And so she had said to me, hey, you know, like, would you want to do food for Courtesy Bar? Like, and so we kind of looked at it and we ran the numbers, and I really wanted to do it, but I was like, you know, I kind of don't think without moving Swine there somehow, it's going to make sense for us. And so we were able to work this deal with Foxtail, where we're servicing the whole Foxtail space now with the Swine and Sons menu. And then we're doing Bar Swine, which is our menu that we're doing for the Courtesy in the Courtesy Bar in the evenings. So it's been cool.
Yeah.
It's a lot. So we're catering, and we've got breakfast, and we've got lunch and dinner and Bar Swine. So It's good.
And you started doing breakfast again, or you're bringing back breakfast basically. Yeah. It's all on the menu.
Yeah.
So that's very exciting.
We did breakfast in the original space.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of, truthfully, it had its like really loyal, like people who loved it.
Mm-hmm. But it we were in that group.
I mean, I loved breakfast in the original. I loved the original space. I mean, it was a beautiful space and it was just...
Felt like home, right?
It really did.
Yeah.
I mean, truthfully.
Yeah.
My family actually slept there after Irma. Wow. So it like was our home.
Yeah.
For real.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had no power here. So we slept there for days. So.
Make do, right?
Uh-huh. So Absolutely. It was very much like actually our home. Definitely don't tell the health department that.
No. So. They don't need to know. They don't listen to this. So okay. It's okay.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where was I? So... Yeah. So we've brought breakfast back, which has been great. And, what I was going to say was it never really fully took off. Even in that first space, it was kind of like, it was a struggle, but now being within Foxtail, they have such a solid morning business for the coffee that it's been really good.
Yeah. So, and that's their flagship location, their very first. And it's a prime spot. There's a good amount of parking. There's like a field just adjacent to it. I think, is that sort of overflow parking, like unofficially?
So that's city land. So again, we're going to hope that no one from the city
stays open. Right?
Yeah. I mean, so there was talk of the city putting in a multi-level parking garage there.
Okay.
I think that has since been scrapped as far as I know. Mm. But something's going to have to give with that. There's all that land that's adjacent to the train tracks, like kind of runs parallel to the train tracks along that back street there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's, it's not a dirt lot, but it's like a kind
it's
of
basically a dirt
abandoned.
Lot,
right? Yeah, it's a city lot. Uh-huh. It used to be storage for the city for like maybe electrical equipment or something for years and years. You know, now they've opened it up, which is really nice because it fills up every day.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're talking about like probably a couple hundred
so
cars.
Where are all those cars
where did they come from?
Yeah.
Where were they parking before? It's wild.
It is.
But you know, they're building that park that on what used to be the Progress Point land down there at the end. So it's beautiful. The renderings are out. It's going to be a beautiful public park. Mm. And so we're really excited about that because people are going to be able to just walk right over and it's going to be awesome. So
that's perfect.
But I do think the city's going to have to kind of make it, they're going to have to make it official with the parking.
Yeah. I mean, with every change comes some adjustments, right? And then people start paying attention to things that they weren't before. And it's like, oh, I mean, we always find a way, right? We adapt, we have to pivot. It's just kind of, it's the nature of things, right?
Yeah.
And you've done plenty of pivoting over the years.
So much.
Three spaces, and you expanded to Tuffy's for a bit.
We did that, yeah.
And Will's Pub for a bit as well.
We did that as well.
A very little known story, originally when East End was opening, you were going to have the butcher shop in East End, Cuts and Craft, right?
Yeah.
And it's interesting just how things end up kind of working out in a certain way. It's like, that wasn't meant to be, but, you know, we were so excited at the prospect and, and you did some markets, the Monday night market that Gabby runs.
Yeah.
And so people got familiar with the brand then, and it just so, you know, happened that Winter Park ended up being kind of the home for Swine & Sons. I was always curious and have never asked this, but the origin of the name Swine & Sons, where did that name come from?
Yeah, so that was when Swine & Sons was first conceptualized. I wasn't working with anybody. I was kind of on my own. I was actually working for Marriott at the time. So I was running one of the restaurant outlets at the World Center Marriott. And Reese and James were working together and had come up with the name, just kind of a play off of Ravenous Pig. And James has two boys. And so, you know, that I think it just sort of came out of that.
But, it's a very catchy name.
Yeah.
But I was like, who are the sons?
But, you know, but really the interesting thing is I carry a great deal of like, I honestly, I think it's like guilt because we have very little pork on the menu.
Really?
At this point. And it's
I hadn't
like,
thought about that.
I feel like people come... Well, that's good. Maybe people don't connect at that. I feel like people come in expecting like a barbecue restaurant and it's just not, you know? And I think that, you know, as I increasingly tweak the menu in my direction, it's like I want it to be lighter and less barbecue-y.
Yeah, you want everybody to be happy. Yeah, I mean, a name is just a name too, right? And it's like,
I mean,
you have your brand and people are familiar with it, and you've got your staples. You've got the Cuban sandwich, which is so fantastic. And
which has pork.
So different. So there's your pork. And the smash burgers are incredible.
Yeah.
Obviously that Nashville hot chicken sandwich is a huge deal. And you guys were actually on a television show.
We were.
Guys Grocery Games.
Yes.
Tell me about how that went.
Yeah. Well, first off, we've stopped calling it a Nashville chicken sandwich. We do call it a crispy chicken sandwich now because there were so many stories. Oh my God, I can't even. There's so many. Well, I was in Nashville in 1992, and I can just tell you that no one would ever have used a chicken thigh for their Nashville. You know, we've gotten so many. It's like, if you make that Nashville claim, it's like incendiary. People are like ready to fight you over it.
I get
that. It's like, okay, it's a crispy chicken sandwich.
Territorial about the name.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
It can't be champagne unless it's from Champagne.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe it could be like Nashlando or something.
It could be. It's catchy, actually.
Either way, it's such a great sandwich.
Yeah.
I can't take the Rager hot, but I'm like somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
And you've got your pickles that you make in house on it, and the famous sauce.
Yeah.
The white
Barbecue, which is the Florabama, we call it.
Yeah. So it is and that was part of I haven't seen the TV show episode. I haven't figured out how to find that.
Oh, I think you YouTube it.
Okay. I did some Googling, and I was unable to watch the show itself.
It exists out there in the world. It's pretty silly. So.
And we won't give away the ending, but how was that, like, being on TV and that whole thing?
You know, it's really kind of funny because I just felt like I spent so many years working in open kitchens, right? Mm. So it's like, I mean, I felt like it was like just sort of another day at work. It was like not a big deal, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it really wasn't. When I watched the episode, I was actually surprised to see how comfortable even I felt like I looked in front of the camera. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, I think it was just, I mean, we're just used to it. It's kind of, so many aspects of what we do is kind of performative. So it's like, I think you just get used to it.
That's cool. I never thought about how that would translate that way.
Yeah. I mean, definitely cooking with the cameras in my face was like, I didn't feel fazed by that. Yeah.
Yeah. So. You just kind of tune them out.
Yeah.
Just like you're in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very used to being watched while I'm doing those things. So it's like, you know, I mean, it was my first time. Well, maybe not the first time doing it with cameras in my face, but, you know, I haven't done it a lot.
Yeah, so. And the competition nature of it too. That's like a kind of a game show in a way, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, actually, one of the really cool things about it was that we were competing against these two other couples. It was like a couples episode. So we were competing against these two other couples, married couples. And they were so cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was so much fun. There was like, you know, it's TV, so there's a lot of downtime where you're just like sitting in the trailer, and we all got along so well. It was awesome.
Wow.
And
they were all chefs as well?
Yeah, so one couple was from California, and he's really the chef. He's Italian. He grew up in a food family. His grandfather was a butcher, and so, and then his wife has culinary training too, but I definitely got the impression that it's more his menu and she sort of assists and runs front of the house. They were very sweet and wonderful. And then other couple was out of Philly, I want to say, and they were really sweet. And we kind of all keep up on Instagram, and it's just, I don't know, it was cool. I feel like it was like one of those, you know, you walk through that experience with someone and, you know, it's kind of a bonding thing. So
I love that.
Yeah, it was cool. It was really great.
And the concept is interesting too, that you're grocery shopping and you're getting instruction from your partner.
Right.
And there are ingredients that are missing, so you have to kind of get creative and figure it out, right?
Right. Yeah. I think I also think that like just years of working in kitchens and just being in high pressure environments, it was like, you know, it was kind of, I mean, truly it was just kind of like another day at work, like a really fun day at work, but yeah, you know, it was yeah. like kind of another day at work, you know?
I love that. Yeah. I had listened to your, we were just talking about your podcast episode, Lunch with Biggie.
Yeah.
And, how, you know, one of the things that you had mentioned was you love solving problems and mm-hmm. it's just like a puzzle every day. And it's like, you have to make things work. And, I'm always so fascinated when it's just in a person to be doing the job that they're doing. And it's like a labor of love. And, you know, it's hard work being in a kitchen and having a staff and making sure that everything is super consistent, which you guys do such an excellent job of. And, you know, over the years, it was you and Reese, your husband, mm-hmm. and you are both chefs. And I love on the website itself, it just very plainly says, Reese was your boss at Dexter's in Thornton Park.
Yeah, he
and
totally was.
And he fired me, which is a very unusual origin story. Tell me about how that went.
I don't even know at this point anymore what year that was. I mean, it was like, it's so long ago, but there is some back and forth about this. Was I 19 or was I 20? So I don't know. I was one of those. So it was like about 100 million years ago. Uh-huh. And, I'd gone to work for Dexter's and I met Reese there and, he did have to fire me. I think it was an attendance thing.
Okay.
If I recall. Right.
Not perfect
correctly.
Attendance.
Correctly. Yeah.
I see.
I was probably a less than stellar employee.
That was one of your first restaurant gigs.
Well, you know, I actually started my first restaurant job was, it's really funny because now we're in that location right by where Orange and Orlando meet mm-hmm, there, mm-hmm. where there's that Einstein's Bagels. It's been there for, I mean, like ever.
I used to live over there. I went there all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that Einstein's Bagels was actually my first food job.
Yeah.
I worked at that Einstein's Bagels when I was 16 years old.
Wow.
So it really has been there for 100 million years.
Yeah.
So Dexter's, there were a few in between that. I worked at that taco place that was attached to the ice cream place. That's where Graffiti Junction is now in Thornton Park.
Okay.
So it was,
I don't think I ever went there.
Yeah. What was it called? The ice cream place was, I went to go work in the building because all my teenage friends were working at the ice cream place, which was called Moose Brothers.
So that was Thornton Park?
Yeah. That was okay. Where the Graffiti Junction is on the corner of Summerlin and Washington there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting how just the certain areas you sort of stuck to at the time, right?
Yeah, well, I feel like way back then, right? Like Thornton Park was the spot to be. Like if you mm-hmm. really wanted to learn to cook, like that. So, you know, so I worked there, but then, and then I worked at Dexter's, which at that time, like Dexter's was pretty like, they employed some serious cooks. Like if, you know, I just remember like, sure, the Dexter's menu was simple and it was kind of bistro food and, you know, but it was all well done and they were doing mm-hmm. everything from scratch.
Yeah.
Always, you know.
One of the first in the area to be doing that.
I think so, for sure, you know.
Yeah.
And then like in our downtime, I mean, I remember one of the line cooks, you know, who was much older than I was, he taught me how to make a perfect French omelet like in our downtime one day. So it's like they had like serious cooks there that could really had some chops. So I did that. And then, yeah, Reese canned me so that I had to move on. But
you guys made up, obviously.
We made up, yes.
Yeah, that's good.
We've made it work.
That's good.
I've been able to let it go over the years.
I hope so.
I still don't know if I agree with his decision. But
yeah, no. He got your attention in a way too,
yeah.
right?
So for sure.
Do you think maybe you got a little more serious after that happened and you're like,
I mean, yeah, maybe. I think what really did it, honestly, is honestly, it's so long ago, it's hard for me to remember the exact timeline, but I think I went from there to that same end of Thornton Park being kind of the cutting edge. So then Hugh opened. Remember
right.
when Hugh opened
in
Thornton Park? And that was like a big deal.
It was.
Because mm-hmm. it was like kind of a flashy, fancy, you know, spot at the time. And Justin Plank was the chef. And Justin was really the one that got me to be serious. Mm. You know, like he was the first one to sit me down. And, you know, Reese had fired me. Fair. But like Justin was the first one to sit me down and say, hey, you know, don't, you know, I was 20 years old. So I was partying
sure.
and doing all the things that you do when you're 20 years old. Justin was the first one to really sit me down and say, look, if you come in hungover again, I'm going to fire you.
Wow,
like, you know,
yeah.
you need mm-hmm. to get it together. Like, because I'm not going to let you compromise my service.
Yeah.
With your crap, you know, basically.
Yeah.
And that was like a big come to Jesus moment for me.
Wow.
You know, like I'll never forget that conversation. And so then a few months after that, when I applied, I decided to apply to culinary school at CIA, and Justin wrote me my letter that got me in. And so I kind of credit him.
That's amazing.
More than Reese. Reese gets no credit. Partial credit.
Partial credit's good too, yeah. Though. And you convinced Reese to also go to CIA,
I
right?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about how that worked.
That was a late night conversation. Uh-huh. It kind of was a challenge. Yeah. Like I was like, what are you going to do? Are you just going to like be Chef Dexter's for the rest of your life? You know? And so I don't think he had done like maybe a little random community college here and there, but I don't think he had really, you know, like he didn't really have a, I mean, neither of us had some grand plan, you know, yeah. Like neither of us.
The roaring 20s, right? It's yeah. Just what we do.
Neither of us were the graduate high school and go right on to the college track type. So, sure. You know, which fingers crossed, maybe my kids will be a little more that type. Like,
as long as they're happy, you know, and can make a living and be, you
and
know.
And don't choose liberal studies as a
yeah.
Shout out to all my.
I mean, a degree is a degree. It yeah. Shows that you can finish something. And I think that yeah. any employer can value that to some extent.
But yeah.
Yeah, I think choosing something that you love is so huge, especially, you know, this is a thing that will always exist, right? Like people will always want to eat very good food. And the fact that you can deliver that on a regular basis and you enjoy it, it's like that's sort of the perfect gig.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great, you know, and I think what we've been extraordinarily lucky with swine is we were able to create this concept that is primarily a daytime concept. So, I mean, when we opened it, so my kids now are almost 13, which is wild, and 10. And so we've been open for about 8 years. So, I mean, I had like toddlers, you know, yeah. When we opened, which is crazy to even think about. And they were there all the time. And I think we were just extraordinarily lucky with being able to get involved with this project where we were able to be primarily daytime so we could like be parents and humans and,
right.
And you know, a family in the evenings. So, you know, and we've expanded our hours quite a bit now at this point, but I also have a much larger team now. So,
yeah. Yeah. At the time, I mean, it is, it's so true because most restaurants don't have those hours necessarily, right? So
yeah, and it's really tough on people who you know, have children to care for, but also want to be in the restaurant business. It's like impossible.
Yeah,
you
just
know?
Balancing yeah. family and yeah. work and those hours and yeah, I mean just the exhaustion that a 12-hour day will get you when yeah. you're on your feet and you know having to solve problems and dealing with just different people's situations and just all of the things that happen. Supply chain. It's like yeah, it's a something new every day, right?
Yeah, it is.
It's wild
every day.
And you guys live in Audubon Park, so yeah. We see you all the time, which is so lovely. How long have you been in the neighborhood?
We have been here for 8 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Time flies.
Yeah. So we moved here before my daughter started kindergarten, and she's now going into this next school year. She'll be in eighth grade.
Nice.
So yeah. So
Audubon Park School, which you guys have done some pop-up events there
yeah.
and some collaborations. Tell me about those.
Yeah, we've done a ton of stuff with the school over the years. I mean, we love to feed the teachers. So that's coming up again. There's all the teacher appreciation events happen at the end of the year
nice.
Or some of them. So so we'll do that again this year. We actually just signed on for that, you know, and then we just kind of go as needed for, you know. The other day I got a phone call. I don't know if you know, if you've been in the school, but we have a ton of, there's like, basically there's an entire aquarium in that school. It's really
yeah.
impressive.
I've been into the media center.
Yeah, where we have an entire coral reef.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got a phone call the other day. The stingrays are coming and the press is coming. Can you bring lunch? Of course we can. You know, so it's like
only at Audubon Park yeah. School would you get a message like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
That's so, the coolest.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So. I mean, just everybody that I've met from there, I've got some friends that work there. And
yeah.
Yeah, it just, what a gift to the community.
Yeah.
For a public school to have that kind of caliber of programming and just the facility itself. I mean, it's a beautiful school.
That's awesome. Yeah, just and we're really so lucky that it's a brand new campus. When we actually first moved to the neighborhood, my daughter did her first 2-3 years. Kindergarten, first and second, and what is now Baldwin Elementary.
Okay.
So over on the other side, because this one, remember there was like the whole, they couldn't lay the foundation because
they found that it wasn't sturdy enough. So they had to reinforce it with more concrete.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
There was going to be a parking garage, but the land really wouldn't allow for it.
Yeah.
So they just made a big lot instead. Yeah. And they had to, I think, redo kind of the footprint of it as well, because that, you know, what they had designated for the parking lot, that kind of had to change. The dimensions had to change completely. Mm-hmm. So, again, pivoting, you know,
that's
what we do.
Yeah. But we're fine because the parking lot connects like directly with the back of Red Light. So we're great.
I know,
everybody's great.
Right. I
all
know.
The parents are so happy.
it really is the best. And hopefully it continues to be accessible. And I mean, the school is very, very good about sharing, and it's just a great cooperation with the community. So
it is nice to be able to use that overflow parking situation.
Yeah. You hear less conversations about the parking shortage in Audubon Park, which is a very positive change.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So recently, you and Reese participated in the South Beach Wine and Food Fest. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So that was at the end of last month in February. And it was really a lot of fun. I had never... We'd done Miami for a couple of events over the years with Ravenous, but like years ago, and I've never done South Beach Food and Wine. And so it's just a really fun time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, there are multiple events. I mean, it's like such a huge deal. There are multiple events that go on all throughout the city, Thursday all the way through Sunday. And so our actual event wasn't on the beach, which at first I was like a little bummed, but now I think maybe I'm a little grateful, because we did drive out to South Beach one day and like really get in there. And I mean, it is like, it's like Reese deserves like some kind of award for driving his truck. Like he has a pretty big truck, you know, and we needed to drive it down there because we took our coolers full of stuff. So, and he like maneuvered that truck through South Beach. Like there's like a billion people, 27 million
some
cars.
Tight areas there, especially if there's an event.
That's, I was really impressed.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's an impressive human.
he really is. But it was really wild out on South Beach. I mean, you couldn't even get remote. You could see all the tents where all the events were happening, but we had passes to a lot of the stuff, but we took the kids down and everything's 21 and up. So we didn't actually end up attending anything else, which, you know, yeah, I don't know. It's always
you kind of had an out that way.
It's
right,
always
too,
a toss up, though. It's like, but it would have been cool to like be adults.
It would have been,
but maybe next year, you know. Yeah. But it was we really never go down there, so like we wanted to take the kids and you know, just see what we could see. So we ended up kind of turning it into a family weekend, and it was really fun. We stayed right in Wynwood, and we walked all around. And I just think Miami's a blast. It's like just really vibrant, and every corner you turn, there's more art and more music, and there's always something going on. We had some really good meals. We didn't spring for any meals that I would say were fancy, but it's like we had some really good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so it was a great time.
The food scene is kind of well known in some circles, but then us in Florida don't necessarily think about it a whole lot, right? For whatever reason, it's just like a little bit out of reach because of the distance. And, you know, there are things there that are very out of our price range. But there are things, as you said, like that are totally within our means.
Well, but you know what though? Like let's fingers crossed this Brightline train gets up and running, because that's going to be so awesome.
Yes.
I mean, I would love to be able to just, you know, run down there and hang out for the weekend. I really had a good time. Like, I really can't wait to go back to Miami.
It's like a 2-hour train ride if this whole thing like works out.
Yeah, it's supposed to be awesome.
It's supposed to be running, I think, within the next year or something.
Yeah, someone said to me they're testing the first leg. Mm-hmm. So what is the first leg is here to maybe West Palm or something like that.
Yeah. That's going to be such a game changer.
So cool.
Yeah, because people from Miami can come here too. So. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's so long overdue. Our public transportation in this city is like one of the things that I think has kept us from really actually becoming a big city in some ways, because I mean, Orlando just feels like the biggest small town because we're all connected in numerous ways, and anybody that you meet knows somebody that you know, and that whole thing. And it's kind of awesome that way too. Mm-hmm. And there's so much collaboration because of it. I think that we have such a unique thing in this town and in this neighborhood. And I love kind of connecting those dots and highlighting those things.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we just love this neighborhood. I mean, it's as much as I can't walk down the street without seeing three people that I know. I mean, Same. The kids are like, they know every single person.
I love how they always come and they always stop and say hi to Misty too when they're on their way to school.
Yeah.
And she loves that.
Yeah. They do love saying hi to her.
Uh-huh. Yeah. She's kind of a local celebrity.
I think that's a funny thing too, is that that's actually something my daughter said to me. She was like, well, I know the names of all the dogs.
Yeah.
She knows every dog in the whole neighborhood. She calls them all by name, you know?
That's adorable.
Yeah.
And it's just so exciting. Like I was talking with somebody about this, just sort of the realization that, you know, this generation of kids that are growing up in this neighborhood, like this is their neighborhood, mm-hmm. you know, from the beginning. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's our neighborhood in a way, but like, we didn't grow up here.
I had friends, you know, I went to Winter Park, I went to Maitland Middle and Winter Park. So I came here, I'm originally from Chicago, but I came here in 1994.
Oh, wow.
So I've been here a long time. And my parents, we moved to Winter Park when we got here. But mm-hmm. I did have friends like that. You know, I have been hanging out in Audubon Park since the early 90s.
That's awesome.
Which is cool.
Yeah. Even like pre-Stardust, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I guess.
Because they were 99.
The only place I remember going regularly, the only business I remember frequenting was the Shaved Ice place where Kelly's is now.
Bob's.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it was called. Something else originally.
Yeah.
That was
We would go to the little window and get shaved ice after school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was like New Orleans style or something like that. It was just like, it was like snow. Like the way that it was shaved was like so great.
Yeah. And it was unlike anything, like I was unfamiliar with that completely. I'd never had that growing up. So that was like a big deal for me.
Yeah. It takes like a special tool to make that, you know, to shave the ice that way. Yeah. And he would always like toss snowballs at us or, you know, whatever. Yeah, it was great. We do miss that. But Kelly's is obviously such an anchor to the community as well.
I love me some Kelly. We go there at least once a week, you know, for the children. It's for the children.
Yes, of course. Yes, yes. Got to do it for the children. You make the sacrifices that we make.
That's right. That's right.
Well, that's very good of you.
I know.
You
know? It's really... I do love some Kelly's. I wait every month on the first of the month, I'm like on Instagram first thing in the morning, checking for the new flavors.
Right? I know. It's so
for
exciting.
For the children.
Yes, of course. Of course. I know. I mean, Aaron and the team there that developed the recipes are so awesome.
Yeah, totally awesome.
I've got to get Aaron on the podcast as well because he's got a cool story as well.
Yeah. Yeah, he's so cool. And so... we worked with him. So at the location, the scoop shop that they have at the Winter Park Social House, where our location is now, they feature a Swine & Sons oatmeal cream pie ice cream. So we worked with Aaron on the development of that. So so they are producing our cookie and our cream cheese frosting, and they kind of swirl it all into the base.
That's killer.
It's really good.
I mean, that cookie is just one of the best things ever too. It's like the Little Debbie thing that we grew up having, but if that was made like really well, like the best ingredients, and just it's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, I can't really take credit for it. I don't even remember who wrote the original recipe at this point, but we have tweaked it a lot over the years. You know, it's actually a really temperamental recipe, which is really strange. So we've had to switch a lot of percentages and things in it over the year. The butcher shop location was really hot. And so we had to make a lot of tweaks to the recipe in there because it just wasn't cool enough for it to like mix properly. And we were having like all these like cookie spreading issues. Like, these are the hard problems I deal with, cookie spreading issues.
So, well, you don't expect it, right? Because you've been doing it for a while and then it's like some of the conditions change and then you've got to figure it out.
Yeah, it was wild. So we have a fantastic pastry production person who also doubles as our catering manager now. And she's amazing. So
that's been going well. How big is your team now?
So we went from 5 in the old location. There were 5 of us, and now we are 19.
Wow.
So, And then, you know, there's a whole separate group that does, like, catered or offsite events with us. It's probably another 6 that come on as needed, come on and off as needed. So, it's a much larger endeavor than it once was. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been to friends' weddings that you have catered, and it just really works out. It's like that kind of buffet style and just such good comfort food.
Yeah.
Like, I love it.
We've backed the full service catering way down. We just reached a point where we couldn't do it comfortably. And then when we moved, we kind of shut catering down for, we really shut it down completely for about 6 weeks when we moved, which was good. We tried to just push right through.
Yeah.
And we had a couple of misses where we were just kind of like, okay, maybe this is not, we need to adjust first. So, but now we're ramping it back up, and we've got this fantastic woman, Jess, who's doing all of our catering sales and managing that whole department now. And she's awesome. So we are looking to kind of keep building it back up. And so I think we will bring the staffed events back, but like slowly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and as events are coming back too, and, you know, things are kind of getting a little bit back to normal, there will be more opportunities for those kind of things, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
I think, you know, our dream one day is to have some kind of maybe production facility or production kitchen or venue where we can cater, quote unquote, but like within our own venue, you know?
Okay.
So we're not always... hall, because I applaud the big companies like the Arthurs of the world. I mean, Arthurs, they have a ton of infrastructure. They're huge, but nevertheless, they're still, I mean, they're like driving full kitchen setups all around Orlando, all around Central Florida, you know, and setting up these field kitchens all over the place, which I think one of the things I discovered from my forays into full service catering is like, I don't really want to do that piece. Like, it's a lot. It's a lot. You know, you do need a lot of infrastructure to make those things happen. It's a lot of work. So it's like, you know, but I'd like to be able to do it. I'd like to be able to host a couple hundred people in a space that's ours. So maybe, you know, we'll put that on the bucket list.
Yeah. There's plenty of opportunity for that here too. Yeah, it's just about timing and that sort of thing. And yeah, now that Reese is with the JW Marriott Hotels, right?
Yeah.
So tell me about kind of what he's doing now with that.
So Reese, maybe almost a year ago, just about a year ago, he probably started the interview process. So I mentioned earlier, I had worked for Marriott. I worked for Marriott a couple of times over the years. I worked first when we moved back from New York. For Primo, Melissa Kelly's Primo, here at the JW. And then I did another stint at the World Center. And so during my second stint at the World Center, I met this wonderful woman, Lindsay. She was my general manager of the restaurant that I was running. And so we worked very closely together. Lindsay's amazing. We're both very busy, so we don't keep in touch, I think, as much as we both would like to, but we take one summer trip together every year. So
that's amazing.
So she had taken the food and beverage director position at the JW Marriott here, which is the property, Grand Lakes, where the Ritz-Carlton is. And one day she kind of just called us and said, I took this position. It's this really big position. The whole team got furloughed during COVID and it's a mess and I have no people and can please, will one of you please just come take this job? I don't care which one of you it is. Someone come.
She was done.
Someone just do this. And so we kind of looked at each other and like, we knew the move to the Foxtail space was coming and, you know, we had the Tuffy's thing going, which it wasn't really working, which is okay. You know,
That's a great location, but inconsistent probably with traffic, right? And it's like
it was really
a little off the beaten path.
It was off the beaten path. And then the big thing that happened was the city of Sanford did that streetscape, which looks incredible now that it's done. But we were cut off from the main part of downtown. I mean, like, it's a little out of the way. And so then when they did the streetscape, they dug up our street. It's like you couldn't get to us, except the only way to get to us was to walk or drive about 4 blocks out of your way.
Wow.
And people just weren't doing it.
Right.
So it's like, yeah. I don't know. And that went on for 7 months before we finally said, okay, this is just not.
That's so painful because it was such a good opportunity.
Yeah.
Too.
The first few months we were up there, it was really solid and it was good. And then they started the streetscape and it really just died overnight. But, you know, so we had that going on and like that was, we were seeing the writing on the wall with that and kind of just wrapping our heads around the fact that like, okay, this is like, it's not looking good. This is not going to work out. We can't sustain this. We knew the big move was coming. So there was a lot of unknown for that. And then Lindsay called and said, hey, can you do this? And I kind of knew, like I've tried Marriott twice and I knew that I didn't really want to go back to doing that. And, you know, also the division of labor with Swine. I mean, Reese had always been the creative piece, but I really run the business, you know? And so we kind of looked at it as like, okay, well, you know, if he goes, sure, like we've got some work to do, but like if I go, it can't sustain. So
somebody's got to run the business end of it, right?
Yeah. And so he went, so he took that job and, he loves it. He is executive sous chef over all of the restaurant outlets. So he runs 7 restaurants at the same time.
Wow. Only he has the energy to do something like that too.
And he really does.
Yeah.
He really does. Like, you know, I mean, he has always been the guy who like, he'll sit on the couch till 3 a.m. just writing menus just because like he has to get it out of his head, you know, which is, I'm not built that way. So that's, we've always been different in that regard, but he's having a blast. I mean, he was all excited. He was telling me that he changed 2 menus this past week. So it's like, you know, he's having a good time. Hopefully everybody can keep up with him because
that makes me so happy.
Yeah. So he's having a great time out there. He really enjoys it.
Yeah.
So it's good, you know.
And it gives you guys like some of your own things too, because living together and working together and raising a family together.
It's a lot.
That's a lot, right?
Yeah.
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 You
it's
need
a lot.
Kind of your own things.
It's a lot, but I mean, truthfully, like he's putting in some really long days right now and like I miss him, you know?
I bet.
Yeah. So that's been a change too.
That's a big adjustment.
Yeah. I mean, so a lot of people, like kind of the big question has been like, well, okay. So like, do you miss working with him? Like, do you wish you would? And I think kind of the answer is like, I mean, yes, you know, it was more fun.
Sure.
When he was working with me every day, you know, I was having more fun on a more consistent basis. But I think that, him not being there, it kind of removed a security blanket, if you will, and made me look at the whole thing and say, like, I have to be a grown up now.
Okay.
Like I have to start treating this business like a business.
Like all of these
it's
things
not,
are on you now.
Right. And I think because like, you know, we laughed about that original location, about our family actually sleeping there some nights, you know, and it's like, and it being like our home, and it was, but then I think when he left, it made me really look at it and go, yeah, but it's business. Like,
yeah,
I need to, you know, smarten up and start making decisions kind of differently and looking at things a different way. So I feel like I'm more of a grown up now.
That's cool.
Than I was a year ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I had to do that. I had to make that change. So,
well, and the comfort level with that idea too, because it's like, you don't want to have to grow up too early. You know, some people do have to do that and they kind of miss out on their youth.
Yeah.
But like, you know, the fact that you embraced it at the time and you developed these skills and you got your act together and now you are like, all right, I'm kind of adulting, as they say.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. I definitely do feel like I'm adulting in a different way. So yeah.
And enjoying it too.
I am. It's different, but it's good. And I mean, I honestly think that in order to grow the brand, I know everybody always says in order to grow the brand, but like in order to grow the brand,
it is a thing, right?
It is a thing. Yeah. I mean, it's a thing because you come to this realization that you can go on doing the labor of love and having the single location and pouring your entire self into it every single day, or you can kind of figure out a way to do that, but in a more limited capacity and make it work in a way that truly also benefits you in more than just an emotional, like, frankly, I think the change, I'm looking at it in more of a way that's like, okay, this is great, but like my kids need to go to college and like I need to retire at some point. So like, how do we make it something that makes my heart happy, but also like is practical?
Yeah.
So, and I just
sustainable,
don't,
right?
I don't know that I would have ever started looking at it that way if Reese would have stayed. So it's like, that's been big, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just getting a little bit more out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
And knowing that you've got to figure this thing out on a different scale.
Yeah.
And even just, I mean, the amount of traffic that comes through Foxtail, that's got to be a different thing because you sort of have a built-in, maybe new audience. Like some of the people just have no concept of what you're doing there. So they're discovering it for the first time. So that first impression really counts, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think for sure. I mean, I think that that's what we can attribute the... breakfast being successful in this location too, for sure. It's not, I don't think the majority of that clientele, I don't think are people coming in because it's Swine and Sons. They're people who have come in to get coffee and they're like, oh, cool. I can get a good breakfast here, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so maybe now they're coming for Swine and Sons, but I think originally, you know, it took some time. So.
Yeah. And the coffee thing is taken care of because it's already there, right?
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about that as much and you've got other beverages and desserts and all of these things. And tell me also about, so in Bar Swine, you've got basically like light bites and appetizers and things like that, charcuterie.
Yeah. So, you know, the concept is like, you know, it's small plates.
Yeah.
You know, I laughed a lot before we got open because, you know, I did a couple interviews and I was like, you know, it's like tapas, but we're not saying tapas.
Okay.
Because it's not Spanish.
Small plates.
But it's like, you know, it's small plates. I think on the actual menu, we call it them bites. They're bites.
Okay. Yeah, so, that's fair.
You know, but it's like, it's little things for sharing. And, you know, the idea is that you come in and you have your cocktails and you have a nice time, but there's also some snacks that are substantial enough to really become a meal if you wanted to order everything, you know. And we do have like a full-size burger and like there's a couple things on there for folks that are hungry.
Yeah.
So
that's perfect.
Yeah.
And Courtesy is such like an ingredients conscious bar too.
Yeah.
I mean, they've made such a name for themselves by being this like just exceptional craft cocktail bar. And it's so exciting to see them in a new location, and downtown served them really well at the time. And I think that, you know, as things kind of shift and progress, I think like people are congregating more in neighborhood bars and things like that. So it just seems like the perfect space for them too at this time.
Yeah, I think that it is. I mean, I think as far as speaking to their processes, it's just as incredible to watch everything that goes into making their drinks. I mean, they do really like everything from scratch. I mean, they had a drink on the menu where they were like, oh, it was like wild to watch this whole process. There was hazelnut milk in the drink. And so they went through this whole test of like, they bought hazelnuts with the skin on them. And then they were like, they had to toast and get all the skins off the hazelnuts, which if you've ever taken the skin off of a hazelnut, it's like paper thin. It's got to be the literal worst task like ever in the food prep.
I had no idea.
World.
Wow.
It's awful. Uh-huh. So if you want a really bad way to spend your Saturday tomorrow, go buy some hazelnuts.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, they did this whole test where they were testing, like, you know, hazelnut milk that they just purchased from the store, right? Next to, like, then they made their own. And then it's like, you know, it's just as incredible, the amount of testing and the amount of care and prep that goes into this. And we've been really fortunate because they have one guy that handles the bulk of their big prep. Mm-hmm. And he's just so cool. He's really just a cool guy. He's very creative and just really a lot of fun. And when the Courtesy was shut down during the pandemic, he actually came and worked for us. So he had worked for us just as an on-call sort of a catering capacity. Mm-hmm. And then he came to work for us full time when the pandemic was kind of at the height and all the bars were required to be closed.
Yeah.
And so that was awesome because it really allowed us to I feel like we got like a behind the scenes, like I was kind of fangirling out a little bit, you know?
I mean, not many people do it to that level, right?
Yeah, it's like, so cool.
Yeah, I think that like attraction to food production at the highest level, just like it's an art form. When you really care about it and you really want to do something that You learn these processes, you learn about the ingredients, you learn how you can make it a little bit different. So this is the best version of something that you've had, mm-hmm. and you remember it forever, mm-hmm. right? It's just like, yeah. it's one of those things that makes life really good, you know?
Yeah.
And it's to be celebrated. And I think that that entire partnership that you have there, and, you know, Kelly's being in there too as a mm-hmm. scoop shop, it's so cool to see that. Like it's very exciting, the timing of it all.
Yeah.
And as you said, the park coming soon, like yeah. that's gonna reinforce yeah, all of it.
I'm really excited too about like, as we all, so we're all kind of starting to settle in now, right? So we all opened in October. So everybody's really starting to like, you know, we got through the holidays, which was, I mean, it was crazy opening in October, and then Courtesy does, Miracle.
Yes.
So I don't know if you've
Miracle on Orange.
I don't know if you've attended, but
yeah, I tried to go to this one, but it was all indoor seating, so we just kind of ended up not yeah. going. I saw it from the outside, yeah, and it looked
and
great.
It's like packed.
Yeah, so every
yeah.
night.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Every single night.
Yeah, and I mean, they had warned me. They were like, "Miracle is serious. Like, get yourself ready." And I was like, I honestly was kind of like, all right, guys, like, I mean, how busy could it possibly be? I mean, you only have, you know, you've got 45 seats. Like, yeah, I mean, it was always
a wait.
They were on a 2-hour wait yeah. for 6 weeks straight. It was the most insane thing I've ever seen in my life.
Mind-boggling.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were smart too, because they had a cocktail uh-huh. that you could get outside, uh-huh. just like some uh-huh. nog or something.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
It was awesome.
It really was.
Really, really cool. So, but I think, you know, it's been so cool to just get that behind the scenes look at their processes and all that stuff. And we have a good time, you know, we're kind of always bouncing things off of each other, and it's been really fun. I mean, they're awesome to work with. Yeah. So it's been cool. Really good. And we did our first, we have a buddy, he goes by the Burger Buff.
Okay.
That's his Instagram handle, but his name is Nick. He kind of found us randomly, I think is how it went down a few years ago. Mm-hmm. We kind of got connected through Instagram. There's like a whole burger culture on Instagram, which like we didn't realize that when we put this burger on our menu, it was going to like change our life. So, but
it makes sense.
Yeah. But I mean really, yeah. so like we have all these burger friends now from around from just through Instagram. But so Nick is really amazing. And so he has this smash burger concept called, it's this pop-up concept called Burger Buff, where he travels increasingly now. In fact, I think he might be in Tokyo now. He
wow.
like had a client fly him to Japan to like make burgers.
No kidding.
Which is amazing. So
yeah. And he's just based in Orlando?
No, he's based in Jersey. So okay. he's just a super acute attention to detail. So he only does one burger one way, you know, but he's just is so meticulous about the details, and he's a fascinating guy. Hmm. But we did a pop-up. He's come down once a year for the past 3 years now to do wow. a pop-up with us. So we just did the pop-up, and we just utilized that courtyard space at the Winter Park Social
Such
House.
Such a good space.
It was so good. I mean, it was like the vibe. Courtesy rolled out the mobile bar and did a couple of cocktails. Kelly's propped the door open and was doing ice cream. And, you know, we had, you know, Foxtail was doing coffee, and, you know, people were going in to get sides from Swine. And everybody had a... It was just, we had a blast. It was really a good time.
Wow.
So we're talking about some future collabs for that space, you know, as the weather is nice right now and everything. So I can't wait.
Yeah.
So we are having a blast. There's a lot of synergy in that building, which is nice.
Yeah.
So.
I saw that. I mean, it's like some AstroTurf. There's a good amount of shade there.
Yeah.
There's a cornhole.
Yeah, there's a couple cornhole sets.
Yeah, a couple cornhole
sets. There's some seating. I wish we could do tables. I don't know if we can get away with that.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
It would be cool. Even if we just did like maybe folding cocktail tables or something for certain events.
Well, I was so happy to see that there is some outdoor seating right out front, mm-hmm. and there's some good shade there. And then there's like a couple of tables on the sidewalk there.
Yeah.
But yeah, where the green space is, where the turf is.
Yeah.
There's definitely opportunities.
Yeah.
For
it'd be cool to do
there.
Some more seating. Luckily out front on the Orange Avenue side, we have that really wide sidewalk. Mm-hmm. So it's like, we are able to put some seating out there because there's enough, space for the public to get by.
Yeah. And I feel like it stays cool during kind mm-hmm. of lunch hours
yeah.
and breakfast
yeah,
hours
it does.
There. So
yeah.
That's ideal. Cause in the meat shop, that was a tricky thing sitting outside. It was like, you're getting blasted. All of that sun exposure.
You get blasted. And I think the other thing is you were like right on the road there, which was hard too.
Yeah.
So this is like, it's more setback, but also I think it's just, I mean, really, if I think about it, I mean, this is like really just my opinion. This is not based on any actual scientific fact, but I feel like people drive a lot slower.
Yeah, there's the light there.
I think because of how the lights are.
Yeah. I noticed that as well. I didn't feel as crazy there.
Yeah, over past the butcher is like, I mean, it's like you might be killed.
It's very scary. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. People don't drive well. I mean, you notice it too when you sit at the Ravenous Pig Beer Garden.
Yeah.
I mean, it's far enough away where you're not like totally affected by that, but you hear people revving their engine and just flying around that corner.
Oh yeah.
And it's such a weird intersection there in Winter Park too.
Yeah.
It's very bizarre.
Those intersections are weird. Yeah. When we were in the original shop, I mean, we used to really say that like there was an accident a day in that intersection.
Yeah.
And it's like this funny situation there where really if they just hung up a like no left turn sign, it would solve a lot of problems.
Yep.
I think if I remember correctly, I might not be right. But I think it's like one of those roads is managed by the county. It's like one is county and one is city and they just like won't
get along,
be nice to each other.
Yeah.
So it's like getting a simple no left turn sign is like an impossibility.
We had that same problem with Corrine Drive here. That was part of it was owned by the city and part of it was county. So getting, or maybe the county owned the whole thing and then they weren't willing to turn it over to the city, but that has finally happened.
Yeah.
So the city can make some changes.
So is that when we got the crosswalk?
That is, yes.
Yeah.
That
okay.
is,
Which
that
is great,
a big part of it. It's so great.
It's so great.
I know.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like one of the best like quality of life things that's happened in this neighborhood in a decade. I know. Yeah. I go to East End so much more now.
That's awesome.
Because I can safely do that without having to go, two blocks to the next intersection, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's sort of like, ultimately, it's like almost four blocks because you're going that way and then coming back.
That was actually one of the things that I noticed about Miami, was it's just like there were just so many people and so many cars and there were no crosswalks. And
really?
There was at one point in Wynwood where we had to walk like nine blocks out because we had the kids, and it was like at one point, Reese just like jumped out in traffic. And after watching my younger child literally almost get killed, I was like, okay, we look for our crosswalks now.
I mean, Florida is not known for its pedestrian safety. Yeah. I mean, Orlando in particular has gotten kind of the bad marks for pedestrian safety, like some of the worst in the country, which is terrible. And I know that the city is doing a ton to try to fix that. And, the crosswalk was a great example of what they're trying to do and do right, too, because of the way that it's set up and the fact that there's signage to block cars from coming out like onto Corrine Drive and not seeing, pedestrians crossing. So, knock on wood,
it's been super safe. What do you think, what's going to happen with the on-street parking, like over by Kelly's, like that plaza, because it is so hard pulling out of there. You can't see. Are they doing anything about that?
They haven't finalized the plans yet. There were extensive studies done by MetroPlan.
I remember that.
Yeah. And they had, opened up the cafeteria at the school and did kind of a presentation of what their findings were. Mm-hmm. And, basically they handed all of that over to the city. So the city makes a decision kind of based on what the study showed and what their recommendations were. But as far as what the city is going to decide on, I mean, all of it is kind of tied to funding at this point. Mm-hmm. So the delays at this point, in the past, the delays were because of that ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Orange County was against the city doing any kind of road diet or getting rid of parking spaces or things like that. But, there are some ways in which people speed on a road that is as wide as Corrine Drive is. Mm-hmm. And that's part of our problem here is that people think that they can just fly, and they just do.
And they do, yeah.
But if you have those visual cues that get you to slow down a bit, it can still be four lanes, but it can also be safer.
Yeah.
So I know that that's the main goal. And, to make sure we have a sidewalk going all the way to Lou Gardens, which we don't currently have.
Yeah.
So all of that stuff, just the pedestrian safety part, calming traffic a little bit, but without creating bottlenecks, they're working on those details. And once they're funded, I hope that all goes
well. I'd like
really
to see them do it on Virginia too, because, you know, we live on Virginia and it's like people just fly. It's the cut through, you know?
Right.
So it's like people just fly from Bennett to Corinne, and it's like, it's crazy.
It is crazy.
Because I've got, you know, I have one child who's very careful and she follows all the rules and she does the things, and she's, and then I've got one wild child that's like, I don't care how many times you tell him not to ride in the middle of the street. And sometimes he'll ride in the middle of the street. And then he says to me the other morning, like, but why can't I ride to school with my AirPods in? It's like, well, because you're going to be killed. So
it's scary, right?
I appreciate your love of music, but like, you know.
It's funny how much of like a reflection of you and Reese the kids are too, right? They're just like carbon copies, basically.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a handful.
He is his father's son.
I think so. Yeah. So,
well, Lexi, thank you so very much.
Yeah.
The website that people go to find all of your things.
Swineandsons.com. It's all spelled out. So SWINEANDSONS.com.
Very easy.
And it's all there.
Yeah. And on the Instagram and the Facebook and all of that, probably a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. We try to really stay up with those things. Actually, we finally hired a marketing person, which has been really magical. So Sarah, do you know Sarah Bolandi? From her company is Orange Island Media.
I am not familiar.
She's been
That's
great.
Awesome.
She just got married. I need to start saying her married name, Brennan. Sarah Brennan is now her name. But
okay.
She is great. She represents, I know she's representing Smoke and Donuts, which I need to get over there.
Oh, I love Smoke
and
Donuts.
She brought us a dozen donuts from right when they were doing their opening, and they were so good.
They're the best.
It's so good.
Incredible. Yeah.
You know, I'm really embarrassed to say that I hadn't tried their food.
Oh,
so
really?
I still haven't had the barbecue, but the donuts were so good.
Yeah,
like,
their barbecue
awesome.
Is fantastic.
Yeah,
I'm so excited
stoked.
About their brick and mortar. Yeah.
I have to get over there. It looks really awesome. I go that way to go to the gym, so like I've been watching it and watching it. I've been excited. So
it's such a sweet family that, you know, just like his mom was always working on the truck too. It's just like, we're huge fans of them as
That's
well.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got to make it over there. Yeah, I need to do that for sure.
It makes it easier when there's a brick and mortar too,
right?
It's just like, you can count on us being here every day, these hours, like that makes all the difference.
Yeah, I know she represents them, and she was representing Bandbox, the alcohol-free bar that's over there, and I don't know if she's with them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
She represents Courtesy. So
excellent.
You know,
that's perfect.
Yeah, she's great. So
marketing is so important these days too. It's like
it's
a necessary evil, right? Yeah.
It's so important. And I really just can do a lot of things, right? Like I can solve a lot of problems, and I can like do some cooking. I can do a lot of things. I really don't want to run our Instagram account. And you don't want me to.
Yeah,
trust me.
I mean,
none of you want me to do
you
that.
You can't do it all. And then it's like there are people who are professional at that and that enjoy that and they know just the angles and the trends.
I mean, I really
changes so quickly, right?
With her doing it, it's just been like every month I'm just like, oh my God, like this is just the best money well spent. Like, I mean, it's just so huge for me to not have to do it.
Yeah, I believe it. So everybody follow the Swine and Sons Instagram account and see what's in store and go check them out in Winter Park. At the Foxtail location. Well, Lexi, thank you again so much, and we'll see you soon. Hello, APGD. A neighborhood podcast is brought to you in part by Stardust Video and Coffee, Audubon Park's beloved neighborhood cafe, bakery, bar, and meeting place. Located at 1842 East Winter Park Road. We're also sponsored by Red Light Red Light Brew Pub. Founded in 2005, Red Light is widely known as the source for world-class imports and microbrews. A wide selection of natural wines, plus award-winning beers brewed in-house. A full kitchen is in the works with an amazing menu by Chef Jess Tantalo. Located at 2810 Corinne Drive, please check out Red Light for all things beer and wine and soon food. Our theme song is by Christopher Pierce, and special thanks to Trey Hester for all of his help in making this podcast a reality. We do hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, please click subscribe and leave a review if you'd like. We'll see you next time.